east.
To the east, my brother, to the east, yeah.
To the east, my brother, to the east.
To the east, my brother, to the east, my brother, to the east.
Education, art, health, music, politics, and all things community.
Yes.
Join me, Ambrose Lane Jr., as we uncover the issues of D.C. communities east of the river on To the East, Mondays at 5 p.m. right here on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW 89.3 FM.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel Diaz. When we in the DMV, you know we're listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for Jazz and Justice. Let's go.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to The Collision, where sports and politics collide here at your home for Jazz and Justice at WPFW and WBAI in New York City. I'm Chuck Modiano, your co-host, and we have Atan Thomas, NBA veteran, as a co-host. DZ won't be with us. He might be chiming in and out. We're going to see because he has a little illness he's dealing with, but we have Coach McNutt with us. And if you've been on the show before, and we have Coach back, and we're very, very excited because we have a lot to talk about, particularly in hoops. We have the WNBA All-Star Game approaching us. We could talk a little bit about WNBA and the season and awards and whatnot. We could talk about hoops. We had the ESPYs last night. And in the ESPYs, the best part about it is Oscar Robertson, the Big O, made a big speech. And we're going to get a little I'm trying to be respectful. We're going to get a historical view a little bit from Coach McNutt as well about his impact. But let me stop right there. Atan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Can't complain. Can't complain at all.
Can't complain. So you know what, I was going to ask, I'm going to bring in Coach McNutt. Coach, how are you doing?
Man, I'm doing well, man. I'm a little concerned here. Did you say Dave is injured again? You know, he's coming up soft lately. You know what I mean?
He's on the DL a lot, is he not?
Yeah, what is all about? But you know what? This is good because he's a shooting guard. And you guys, you know, you guys are scorers, man. I mean, you and E, y'all score the rock. And I'm a natural point guard. So I'm gunning for his spot anyway. So let him stay out with his injuries and missing practices, man. His time is short. I'm coming after him, man.
I know. Listen, he was Cal Ripken for a while. He wasn't missing a game for years.
That's true.
So it's good to hear that he's somewhat human right now. though we wish him very, very well.
Oh yeah, that's my guy.
Yeah.
I wish him, but he got to bring it, man. I mean, competition. You know what? I want to see if you second this. I tell young kids, and I tell adults, I tell everybody this in sports. Wow. I think, and I want you to second this, E, and jump in here on Chuck, that the hardest thing to do in sports, everybody's talking about hit a curveball or hit a golf ball or play, you know, play tennis at a pro level. I think the hardest thing to do in sports is to make a professional roster.
Of course.
I mean, yeah. let me ask you this. Cause some people counter and says, well, no, winning a championship. But I just think, you know, getting on a professional roster, NBA, football, especially the NBA, because I watched some of this NBA Las Vegas and
Summer
and
League. Yeah.
And man, there are guys that, for example, you take the list of the 2024 draft, and the 2025 draft was just you know, a couple of weeks ago, and everybody's putting in the shiny new toy. Man, I'm looking at some of the guys that were drafted in the 2024 draft. You know, Alex Czar here for the Wizards, Reed Shepard for Kentucky, Stephen Castle, who was the rookie of the year for the Spurs. I mean, Klingon, Rob Dillingham. These guys were bad boys. Mm-hmm. And you know, nobody's talking about them because the new shiny new toys just got drafted. There are guys, gentlemen, I'm sorry, I got to get the rant. I'm going to throw it back to you.
No, you're good. You're good.
You guys good. That are players of the year in their league.
Yeah.
And didn't get drafted. The cat from North Carolina, the point guard from R.J. Davis didn't draft it. Uh-huh. R.J. Lewis from St. John's. We got a New York audience.
That was
player
surprising.
Of the year.
That
got
was
a
surprising.
Free agent contract.
That was very surprising. I got to
say.
Man.
Yeah, man. I mean, I tell them, I say, man, this NBA stuff, man, you know, it's no
I
joke.
I mean, you have Eric Dixon from Villanova. And I watched him all year. He was leading the country in scoring. He led the – and he didn't get drafted.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
There's a lot of people. A lot of people.
Don't take it for granted. But
I agree.
But you know what you're saying, Coach? It actually checks out because what we do is we often rate players once they've made it in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And they're only or another roster. But I'm going to say NBA because NBA only has 12 slots and 15 if you count disabled lists. Whereas, you know, football might have, you know, 45 and baseball has like 20 something.
Right.
So it's incredible. And then we start rating like someone's a bum if they're at the end of the bench.
Yes.
They're incredible because we're weighing them versus the entire population. And so we have a ton on the line, 0.00001% chance and makes it. And we don't celebrate that person
who
made that roster and fought. And all of these people were, you know, they're like the best in their local area, if
yes.
not the state. And we need to be celebrating that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a fascinating thing to make a professional roster. Matter of fact, I even downsized it to the college level for a young man. And you're living it right now, Eton, with your son, with Anthony Grant at Davidson, at Dayton, I'm sorry. A great fit. I'm so happy that you made that move, my friend.
Appreciate it. We're excited.
Grant's a beautiful cat, man.
Yeah.
Talk about a guy that really got hurt. He had a powerhouse the year that
COVID.
COVID.
Yeah.
I think his team would have been a number one seed. It was that strong.
They were. That was when Obi Toppin was on the team.
Yes, sir.
They were rolling. Okay, Coach knows all the. I know you know all the history. So
at the college level,
I
yes.
I'd be surprised that you know all of this.
but I tell young people, I says, look, for you to continue your athletic career at the next level, and your mama ain't got to write a check, meaning that you're on there on a scholarship or some kind of assistance, that's a beautiful thing, man.
100%.
And, you know, people say, well, I'm at a D2 school or I'm at an NAIA school. Dude, you're playing at the next level and you're
right. 100%.
You know what I mean? So then you get up there and say, oh, he's a bum at the end of the bench. What are you talking about, man?
Those are people that don't really, you know, and that's why I like, and I know I disagree with them a lot. As far as Brian Scalabrine in their morning show on NBA TV, SiriusXM, NBA, whatever it is. But he had this thing where people kept calling him a bum and kept calling because he didn't play that much. He didn't do all, you know, they was mocking him, calling him, you know, white mamba, everything like that. So he did this thing where he went up to the park and was playing guys one-on-one. Did you see this? So it was like, you know, all these guys that were talking all this noise and everything like that. It wasn't even close. Now Brian Scalabrine, you know, he's not the most, let's say, not the most in shape person.
Right.
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 Hasn't been playing for a while. He mopped the floor with everybody that was on the floor. And I was like, people don't understand how good the last player on the bench of an NBA roster really is, to your point.
Yes.
And think about what Kwame Brown said a couple of years ago. He was being sort of attacked by a famous announcer, and Kwame came back and said, well, you're attacking me? I made the NBA. You're saying I didn't amount to what I was supposed to? I'm from Georgia in a small town. I made the NBA. I bought my mother a home. Mm-hmm. I was able to take care of my family. You're going to tell me I'm not successful? Really?
But that's my problem, and I know we're going off on tangent. I know you want to talk about something, but let me say this real quick. That's my problem with seeing a lot of the commentators that I see on the, you know, the top networks on ESPN, and you go and look at their background, and they ain't playing. You remember when Jalen Rose was talking to Skip Bayless, and he said, I pulled up your stats from when you played. You averaged 0.01 points per game on JV, and that's as high as you went. Do you remember that clip? It was classic. And Skip Bayless, the look on his face, because they talk so terribly about players. I mean, even Stephen A. Smith. You look at his background and where he played. You're like, all right, y'all really are talking a lot to not really playing at a high level. You know.
Yeah. And that was the guy I was referencing. I'll say his name.
Stephen A. Smith.
But no, that's fine. But it's not just Stephen A. It's the Skip Bayless. It's the whole industry now. And what's interesting now, because we're going to make a segue to WNBA, when you watch the WNBA halftime, and they're giving sports analysis. It's basically usually all women, and they're giving sports analysis. You know what? This person needs to go left more. They talk about percentages and how the defense is playing and trapping. But if you go to the NBA analysis, it's more like they just didn't get the job done. It's really generic. There's no actual analysis.
Right.
I'm told that's by design. And one of my concerns is that you have this superior WNBA announcing, and as it grows and as it gets bigger, are we going to lose that for a dumbed down version to reach any fan, because we see that in the process. But you know, since we're here on a WNBA, I'm going to kick it to you, Atan, for a second, because you know, you recently wrote an article. You want to talk about it?
I do, and we could get to it, but I want to ask you, because real quick, though, because the Aces played the Wings last night, right?
Yeah.
Asia Wilson had an unbelievable stat line, like 36 points, like, so just completely dominated. Yeah. I went to the Mystics game when the Aces played the Mystics, and Asia Wilson wasn't playing. And it was a fantastic game. You know, I took my daughter and her team. You know, the Mystics won. They were playing fantastic. Kiki did a great job. I'm so impressed with her. She's made the All-Star game as a rookie. But the Asia Wilson effect and the difference of that team with no Asia Wilson on it is absolutely amazing. Now, last night during the ESPYs, and this is not a knock, okay? I say this this is not a knock, but Caitlin Clark won the WNBA Player of the Year. How is it possible that in what world, with the season that Caitlin Clark has had this year, and she got injured again, and I hope she doesn't play in the All-Star weekend, because she's obviously not healthy, and they need to just let her get healthy and then let her come back. They're mismanaging that whole thing, but that's another topic. But how does Caitlin Clark win the WNBA Player of the Year over Asia Wilson? Can you please explain that to me, Chuck? Explain
that rhetorical question. But go ahead, Chuck.
It is a rhetorical question.
You know the answer. Go ahead,
Chuck. We know the answer. We gotta state some facts. Asia Wilson,
hold up. Before you go, let's take a little break. I want you to think about it for a little bit, because I really want to know the answer of this, because I'm looking at it, and Asia Wilson has been tearing up the whole WNBA. Like, it's not even – it's Asia Wilson, then it's everybody else. You know what I mean? Like,
then it's Nafisa Collier.
Then it's Nafisa Collier.
There's a second tier of Nafisa Collier and Brianna.
100%.
100%. And AT, Alyssa Thomas, who never gets enough credit all the time.
But Caitlin Clark is down on the list.
Yeah, she's down on the list. She's not even in the second tier at all. And we could argue. But Asia Wilson.
Hold that thought, because we got to come to a break.
I love it.
Mike, let's go to a break, and we'll come back, and we will talk about this. Mm. And Chuck, you will have the floor, because I want to know the answer. So we'll be right back with more of the Collision, yeah, the Sports and Politics Collide.
I love it.
Uncle says you must be sick. All you talk about is just get rich. Choke my net and ice my mind. Beat the system with chains and whips.
This is culturally inappropriate.
You run from the spirit of repossession. Too much enamel covers your necklace. I buy, you buy them sections. You buy watches, I buy collections. Misery's fueling your aggression. Jealousy's turned into obsession. Reality TV is mud wrestling. Some sign checks I know better than. Beware of my name that there's delicate. You know I know where you're delicate. Crush you to pieces, I hum a breath of it. I will close your heaven for the hell of it. You think it'd be valor amongst veterans. I'm watching your fame escape relevance. We all in a room, but here's the elephant. You chasing a feature out of your element. And those lab diamonds under inspection. The question marks block your blessings. It's no tombstones in the desert. I know by now you get the message.
Woo.
Man.
Woo. Shout out to the Clips. That album. Hey, Mike, I know you up on hip hop. I got to ask real quick. You heard that album?
Magic Mike.
Of course, man. Banging.
Man, I'm going to tell my kids that he was talking to Trump. You know what I mean? On that, I know he wasn't. I'm going to tell my kids he's talking to Trump. But the whole album, The Clips, is great to see old school coming back. You know what I mean? And showing that they can do it. Now I'm waiting for Andre 3000's album to drop and a few other old school cats. But yeah, Clips is off the chain. But Chuck, go ahead. You have the floor.
Well, first of all, I ain't like you insulting Magic Mike, man. Magic Mike is down. That's why I call him.
Oh, yeah, I know. It was a rhetorical question. Man. I know he's heard it.
I got your back, Magic Mike.
Thank you, Coach Ref.
That's right.
Come on, Chuck.
Okay, let's talk. Asia Wilson. I don't think people understand what she did last year. She had the greatest season in WNBA history. In WNBA history. She averaged 27 points a game. And when she did that, she broke an 18-year record, single-season scoring record, by Diana Taurasi. That's what she did. And people don't realize that. And she technically, even though she had the highest average, because Angel Reese had the highest average of rebounds, she played fewer games. She also set the record for most rebounds in a season. That's what she did. And between that, block shots, steals, she's like in every category. She had the greatest season. So for you to give WNBA ESPY award, which is a media award really to Caitlin Clark, is a symbolic of a much greater problem that we have in media. And it is that the media is catering to the fans. And the media is not catering to reality. And that Caitlin Clark, because she gets ratings and because she has this mob that complains about everything, about any non-award, any ranking, any regular foul in any other game, that mob comes after the media. And when the media plays to them, what they do is they get better ratings. It helps them. So rather than honesty, and what I believe is the easiest decision ever, remember, Asia Wilson was a unanimous MVP, and it wasn't even close. By doing that, is a problem with big media in and of itself. That's how, I mean, that's a travesty. Facts don't matter. Stats don't matter. Coach?
Stats don't matter. I mean, come on, man. And record, I mean, what was the record? I mean, you know what I mean? With the FIBA was what, 500?
Yeah, it was 500. They were a much the Aces were a much better team, and FIBA was 500. And, you know, there are a lot of people who say that they turned it around, but they really didn't, because they went 6-5 at the end of the previous year. They were lean going that way. But go ahead.
Right. And I guess you guys have mentioned it before, But Caitlin leads the league in turnovers. I mean, you know what I mean? So it's put up numbers. And again, the blanket truth is you got people that don't, that are not fans. They know Caitlin's name. So she's always going to get the vote. She's always going to get, they check in just to see her. They don't know anybody. They probably couldn't name five other players in the league, but they know Caitlin. So like you said, it's entertainment and it's media driven. So she's the golden child.
Yeah, yeah. I bet we won't hear any complaints from Dick Vitale or Christine Brennan about this though, huh?
Yeah.
I lost. What did Vitale say? I got confused with what Vitale was saying. I know what Brennan
said. Break it down, Chuck.
Oh, Dick Vitale, you responded, but Dick Vitale is basically saying it's a travesty that Caitlin was voted only the ninth best guard and best guard when actually the vote was most deserving this year, and she missed many games.
Right,
and it must be jealousy. This is the what we hear the narrative. It must be jealousy of these other and really coded black players, because that's what we hear. And when we these right. black players who are just jealous of the white woman coming up, as opposed to actually objective data on someone who missed a lot of games and is having a horrible shooting season. And right. I say horrible, like accurately. I mean, we're talking about 28% from 3-point range. Right. To give you perspective, in Aja Wilson's season where she won the unanimous MVP, she shot as a center 31% from 3-point range. And Caitlin is shooting 28% this year. So objectively speaking, I could make the argument that 9th best this year is actually kind of high.
Mm-hmm.
That narrative that you're talking about, and you mentioned it earlier, because I did write an open letter to RG3. And
yes, I want to hear about it. I can talk about that. Go ahead, man.
Okay. So this is what it was. So a quick recap. Someone posted a picture. All right, so I'll even go back further. Andrew Reese was awarded as the cover of NBA 2K26.
Yes, sir.
And so, you know, it was her, Carmelo, and Shai Gilgeous, right? Those are the people who are going to be on it. And so somebody who, you know, and the Angel Reese hate happens all the time. That's one thing. All the time. So somebody put a meme out, and it had a picture of the NBA 2K cover, but it had a picture of a monkey replacing Angel Reese's face. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. So RG3 tweeted out and said, you know, like, I don't stand for this. This has gone too far. You know, we shouldn't have this. You know what I mean? Condemning it. But then in the middle of his condemnation, he went back and started talking. This is in the same tweet. He didn't even go in a different tweet. It's the same tweet he started talking about, you know, yeah, I do. He's like, I have to say, according to my anonymous sources, Angel Reese was jealous of Caitlin Clark. And, you know, I'm sticking, I was right about that before when all of y'all jumped on me when I said it. That's basically what he was saying. So he's parroting this narrative about this jealousy. And so I wanted to write an article really just breaking everything down of what he is doing. And So I compared it to Jason Whitlock, and I said, please don't become Jason Whitlock. And that's somebody who takes on certain perspectives because they know that it appeals to a certain demographic. That's what Jason Whitlock does. That's his shtick. You know what I mean? And I see RG3 going down that path. RG3 doesn't have to do that. He's RG3. You know what I mean? And he's good at what he does. He's a good, you know, he was on NFL Today. He, you know, the way his breakdown is, he's charismatic on the mic. He's great, you know, behind the camera. But there's this element of the area that he's going to. And I was just like, you don't have to do this. And do you know what you're doing? So I just broke it down for him. And I said, you know, the narrative of the jealousy and everything like that, and the people who are the Caitlin mob that you're feeding. Now, this is not all Caitlin Clark fans, because all Caitlin Clark's fans don't fall into this mob. Mm-hmm. But they are using Caitlin Clark as a symbol of white grievance and white superiority. That's mm-hmm. what they're doing. And I related it to something in the past. I remember my grandfather breaking this down for me back in the day was when Jack Johnson, when he was fighting the Great White Hope.
Jeffries.
There we go. Yep. Jeffries. Yeah. James Jeffries. And James Jeffries was the symbol of white superiority. And so when Jack Johnson beat him, white people rioted. There was all of this bloody, big, they was upset. They was, you know, and why were they upset to such a high degree and a high level? It was because that went against their narrative of white superiority. Now, fast forward to a few years ago, when Angel Reese beat Caitlin Clark, it was the same thing. They made Caitlin Clark the symbol of white superiority. So when Angel Reese beat her and then told her about it while she was beating her and then talked to her and everything like that, that's how Angel Reese became public enemy number one to them. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, they've hated Angel Reese ever since. And so, you know, and now they're saying the narrative of how they're jealous of Caitlin Clark and this white damsel in distress, and we all need to protect our white damsel in distress because these big black WNBA players are trying to foul her too hard. And, you know, Jason Whitlock used language like, you know, who is it? Carrington, DJ Carrington. He said she stabbed her in the eye and assaulted her. I was like, bro, it was a foul. Now, Caitlin Clark came out and said, no, it was a regular foul. It wasn't even nothing like that. You know what I mean? And then they backed off, but they keep trying that narrative. So now RG3 is parroting that narrative. So he's, you know, putting on the, you know, yes, Angel Reese is jealous. And so there was a foul that happened. And he was like, look at her face. I know jealousy when I see it. She hates Caitlin Clark. And all of those, you know, white Caitlin Clark mob was like, yeah, that's right. Even RG3 says it. You know, it's not racism because we can't be racist because RG3, he's black and he says it. And that's what he's allowing himself to be utilized as. So I had to break all that down for him in an article, you know, and it's gotten a very strong response from a lot of different people. But I don't know if he understands the role that he's playing. So just in case he doesn't know, I broke it all the way down. So that's the article that I wrote.
You go with Chucky. You want me to jump in here?
No, I want you to jump in, Coach. We don't have you every week. Jump in.
Man, I read that thing, Eitan, and I read it slowly.
I took my time with it.
It was evident. I mean, it was evident because it was from the heart.
Right.
You started out with how Malcolm met RG3. By the way, it's RG-me.
Yep.
And not RG3. It's RG-me from this point going forward. And I can touch on that. Mm-hmm. And how he became an instant fan, and you guys had the jerseys and going to the game and practicing the cold and all that. That's a beautiful thing. That's a family thing.
Yep.
Can't be touched. I felt bad for you because this is a phony cat. and it showed up in what you follow up in your writing. But that really struck me. I'm like, wow, man, because you know you've been to the mountaintop. You played in the NBA. You played at the highest level. You're a professional athlete. And even with that, because it was your son and eventually your daughter, and you know, kids, we emulate. They follow. They want to be like posters and jerseys and so forth and so on. So you bought into that for your son. Right. Then you realize who this cat became.
Yeah.
And he showed himself with the Washington football team, whatever it was when he was there.
Mm-hmm.
Because he showed who he was. It was RG me and not RG3. He did a lot of things, and I saw it instantly. So, and again, I'm a lot older, so I saw him as a phony dude. When he aligned himself with Danny Boy, with Dan Snyder, and he aligned. So that was a separation with the team, right there. And Ryan Clark, who was a teammate, he saw this. That's why his going back at RG3 when this first thing came out about hating Angel Reese, hating Caitlin, was so strong. He saw the phoniness of this guy. He's the type cat that, and this is one of the things why he suffered as a quarterback. Instead of taking the check down means throw the ball out to the flat, to the receiver that's open and get 5 yards. He wanted to throw it 30 yards to get the big play. So those kind of things showed up. He'd dance in a pocket. He'd take off because he's a brilliant athlete. I mean, he was a track star, football, Heisman Trophy winning at Baylor. So, but he was a me guy. He was me. Okay. So now he gets out of league. Injuries kind of. By the way, you touched on the injury issue, but I'm gonna leave that one alone. Depending on time, because you said something about that the team put him out there. I also say that no, he saw himself as a warrior and that he wanted to be out there and he was fighting spirit to get out there. But that's another issue. I want to stay on point. So now, here we come. Now he's in the booth, and he comes out and he slams Angel Reese saying, "Hey, that's not sports, dude. How do you go in and look in somebody's heart and say she hates them?" So instead of the narrative of saying that everybody's hating on Caitlin, especially the black athletes, he uses Angel Reese as the face of this.
Yep.
Okay, so now he comes out. Now here we go. So we had an issue with Clark and to go back and forth. It subsided, but now here it comes again. The cover comes out. So this is a softball. You can hit that out the park. Right. Hey, this thing should not be happening. Let's get out of the racism. She's a beautiful lady. She's promoting the league. She's a double double every game. Let's leave it alone. Let's cool it with the racial stuff. But he couldn't do that.
And
he could not do that.
Right.
He had to. First of all, he posted the picture, which is wrong because you have a different audience. You have more of an audience, so you don't post it. That showed a lack of compassion. That could a lack of insincerity, a lack of empathy, because you posted a picture. You didn't have to post it.
We'll see. Wait. On that part, I think that people needed to see it because they needed to see the level of evil and the level of racism and attacks that Angel Reese has constantly. So one of the things, because I interviewed Rob Parker and asked him about, you know, everything. And you know, he said the same thing. And I was like, no,
He said the same thing as what I'm saying?
Thing that you're saying, yeah.
Okay.
He didn't need to post it. But I was like, no, but think back. When Emmett Till was killed and they insisted on having an open casket so everybody can see the level of evil. No, that's how I don't know if he looked at it that deep, but that's how I looked at it, because there's a lot of people that are saying, no, the attacks on Angel Reese are not that serious. And this is an example of many. This is one of many memes that I see across social media of attacks on Angel Reese. So I think people needed to see it, but go ahead. Continue.
Point well taken. Mm-hmm. But here's the fact: why he didn't let that be a standalone.
I agree.
That's it. Get in, say that. Get out. You're looking good. Nobody can criticize you on that. Mm-hmm. But he goes and say, well, but I've talked. By the way, I've talked to some Angel Reese. I'm paraphrasing. You know, people that are inside her circle, and they say the hate is legitimate. And then he went on and on and on. And I'm saying, see, dude. That's a phony dude. You're disingenuous. Yeah. You're insincere, because that was a no-brainer. You could have stopped right there. But no, here it is. The RG me ego that you had here as our quarterback is showing again. And you couldn't just let it ride. You had to go in here and jump on this thing again. I'm trying to say this right, because I it's hard to question somebody's blackness. But I'll put it this way. It's a lack of racial pride and ethnic value when you go ahead and instead of that, let it be a standalone statement, you decide to double down and get back on the topic of Angel hating Caitlin. That's okay. That's just, I didn't see that. But to me, it's just typical of him that I've seen it from when he was here from day one. And so the catch bothers me. Then Shaq jumps in. And this is where I come to you guys in the media. I could, you know, because Shaq jumps in, and I loved every word he said. Les, I'm gonna punch you in your freaking face.
Yeah, that was a little much.
Because I'm not sure.
I get the point.
I loved every word he said. Man, he came out and supported this lady. Said, "Look, dude, we know who you are. You're a phony dude. You know what I mean? I'm gonna hit you in your freaking face and all that." Okay, and Shaq's not ordained, but he's a sheriff
in I mean, you know, he was just talking, but he can't say stuff like that though.
Right.
He can't threaten nobody like that on TV.
And I'm gonna get out. I'm getting ready to give a bounce pass since Chuck is running the lane. I'm giving him a bounce pass so he can make this layup. But I'm gonna get out on this. RG3 is so different. So different than Jaden Daniels. I absolutely love Daniels. Daniels is what we call back in the day, and I'm a lot older than you boys, and you guys might know the term, but you don't know the way I know it, an old soul. Daniels came in, He didn't want no panache, glory. I just want to win. I don't care who gets the ball. I don't care how we score. He just has a different kind of personality. I resent it. I understand the comparisons, but I resent him because he's a different kind of cat. This is a good dude, all in for team. He's not an eye guy. He doesn't seek media. He just wants to win and get better. We are in, we, meaning the D.C. Washington Commanders, Washington football team. I don't know. I'm not digging Commanders. But we are in a good place with this quarterback for the next 12 years, barring hell.
Ooh.
I'm out. Ooh. Oh, come on, Chuck. Go. You're feeling lame, man. You've been running hard, man. Hit this bounce pass. Make this layup, man.
Jaden Daniels is the easiest bounce pass ever. I know we're not talking necessarily about him, but I look forward to that.
I see the floor well, baby. I see the floor well.
You make that layup. By the way, breaking news, Commanders signed Von Miller to a one-year contract. Mm-hmm. He's not the same Von Miller years ago, but we're going to take Von Miller over in D.C.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, building a team. So, I mean, Commanders, they're elite now. But now, you know, to what you said, what's interesting, you know, Ton opens with Jason Whitlock. I don't actually pay Whitlock much of any mind because he has a shtick. He's been doing it for about like 30 years, and his shtick is to provide cover for white bigotry. But his shtick is very well, like, people understand that. And the situation with RG3 is interesting because RG3 was working with ESPN. And I'm going to be very honest with you. And we've had many discussions on the Collision about how good he was his rookie year, how great he was, and how Mike Shanahan left him for dead on the field. I've defended him in many ways. But he was actually pretty decent at ESPN, and he gave good analysis. But not only did he give good analysis, there were many times he actually gave analysis on racial injustice. But he didn't call it racial injustice. Like, he would talk about something that was unfair or a disparity, or even more recently, I saw him on Twitter, and he would talk about how Joe Burrow was hooked up with his receivers, and they signed the brothers. I'm talking about Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, and I think that and Joe Burrow spoke out for his receivers, which is very rare for a white quarterback to do, by the way. Joe Burrow is basically like, listen, you sign my guys, or I'm not going to go there. And he will give that analysis, but he won't actually say, he'll say brothers, he won't say the word race. And what I'm saying is that he is very capable on past commentary of seeing racial injustice and some nuances. And what has happened recently, and maybe because he's not at ESPN and he has a podcast, is I just think, you know, Caitlin is gold, and Caitlin and the mob comes in and they shower love on you, and maybe he wants numbers. But there's something about capitalism that is going on within all. I'll let other people discuss what you were discussing about race, who he is. I'm not interested in that. But I am interested in that if he changes it up to suit a crowd, to chase a crowd, then he automatically becomes an enemy of journalism, and he's committing journalistic malpractice like all the other people who are just trying to cater to the Caitlin mob.
Yeah, but I was kind of trying to plead with him not to go in this direction. You know, do not become Jason Whitlock. Like, yeah, you are better than this. And this is what you're now. I know the people in the comment section of mine were like, you know, what are you talking about, Ton? He's not better than this. Why are you giving him so much? And I feel y'all. I understand the anger and the frustration, but I have to hope that there is. And I made a strong reference towards the end. And I made the reference of the movie Bamboozled, Spike Lee's movie. So if you remember at the very end when, you know, y'all remember Bamboozled? Y'all both remember?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, cool. So you remember at the very end when Savion Glover is looking in the mirror before he's about to go out on stage, and he's supposed to put the black face on, and he's just looking at there, contemplating and thinking about everything, and he's like, I can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't look myself in the mirror, and I don't like what I see, and I can't do it. So he went out on stage and didn't have the black face on. And then Michael Rappaport came down and like, what are you doing? Stop dancing. What are you doing? You know what I mean? That whole thing. And then they kicked him out. But he walked away with his head held high and was like, it's okay. If I have to do that in order for you to like me, I don't want to do it. And now I can walk away as a man. And I was saying, that's what I hope that RG3 gets to the point where he doesn't have to do this shtick, where he doesn't have to go the Jason Whitlock route, and he can stand up and be Robert Griffin III. You know what I mean? Because he is very talented at what he does. and he can have great success.
But you know what? I think that's too late. I think he already chose that path because, like Chuck and you just said, he was he I should say was he just moved to Fox. I think he's going to be the number two guy in the booth behind I forget the names, but anyway, for college
that settles
football,
it then. Yeah. That settles it.
But I mean, he's very good. I mean, he's poised. He knows this, he knows to talk. I mean, he can rally up. He's quick wit. He can, you know, he can smile. He can bring laughter. But yet he can hit the points with his analysis. He's very, very good. So he didn't have to go there. He chose to go there. Now, Ryan Clark got into other things about, you know, twice married white and all this kind of stuff. So he chose to go to that audience because he could have stayed right where he was. He could have chose to stay, you know, the way he came out in support of Angel and against the cover. But he chose by jumping right back into Caitlyn. Angel hates Caitlyn. That's where he wants to be. So I think if he were to read your letter, he would say, he would probably just say, well, you know, you ain't part of my audience, dude. I'm happy where I go. Cause I think he came to that crossroad already and chose to go there because he was good just on his analysis and, the way he presented his stuff on ESPN. So he chose to go there. I don't see this being a choice for that. He's already walking down the path with his walk boy, Jason Whitless. I'm calling him Whitlock. And Whitlock was a very accomplished cat, man. He played football at Ball State. He was down for the cause as it relates to the black athlete and so forth and so on.
You're talking about a Kansas City star?
Yeah, when he was at the Kansas City Star. Then he went over to ESPN to try to launch what is, Undefeated now?
Undefeated, yeah.
Yes. There was another name that he was trying to, they brought him on to launch it, and it failed. He couldn't get it off the ground. And then he lost that job. Then he went with Skip for a little while, but that didn't work on ESPN. That was on, you know, Fox One or one of those channels. That lost. So his last stop on the train was to get where he is now, Fox spewing hate and tearing us down. And I'm talking about the black athlete and black folk at every chance he can take.
Well, and, well, the thing is, I was on a panel with him. This is my last year in the league. I was at Atlanta.
What year was this, buddy?
This is 2011.
Okay.
So this is right before the lockout. It was Spike Lee's panel, and it was at Morehouse. So with the panel, it was Alonzo Mourning, you had Stephen A. Smith, you had Jason Whitlock, you had Vivian Stringer, Jim Brown. It was an amazing panel, right?
Wow.
So, yes, so yeah, I know. I'm like, man, what am I doing with all these other people? So it was this amazing panel. And I got to talk to Jason Whitlock and hear him and hear how he speaks and hear how everything. And I was like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? So
he was down.
And I saw what he wrote. So then I saw a piece that he wrote about, it was the NBA All-Star Weekend was in Vegas. And he wrote it. And the way that he wrote it, it was like, I'm like, bro, do you understand what you just are saying? Like, you're talking about, you know, all the black people, like, we're like monsters and scaring all the white people away and everything like that. He said he related to walking on a prison yard and all this different, you know, language that he used. And then that's when I first wrote an open letter to Jason Whitlock. Cause I was like, wait, I see what you're doing. You know what I mean? You don't even believe this stuff, but you know that there's a certain demographic that is going to gravitate towards that. And they're going to pay you and give you all the pats on the top of the head and award you for saying these things. Mm-hmm. So then I saw another thing he wrote. Cause he was condemning Reverend Sharpton and something else for something that was protesting. Then he was just condemning. Then he went like down the list. And I was like, oh, I see where you're going. You're doing this on purpose because I spoke to you. So I know what you think. And I know this is not what you think. You know what I mean? So that makes it even worse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a good Jason Whitlock story.
No, go for it.
Hi, everybody. Dave Zirin here.
Off the DL.
Off the DL. Is it okay if I jump? I have a real
good one. You're like Willis Reed.
All right, let me.
Willis Reed. Oh no, I can't let that. Willis Reed.
I'm sorry. I got excited for a minute, Coach. Please forgive me.
I hate to say it, but given how I'm feeling gastrointestinally, it's more like Paul Pierce, if you know that story.
Oh Lord, don't.
Sorry. Oh, respect to Paul Pierce, who just had his 19th network sports show canceled. Sorry. Hey, it's true. This guy's gotten more chances than the president at this point.
Hey, Dave, coming out firing.
As has Jason Whitlock, for that matter. Look at the Jason Whitlock trajectory, if you will.
Come on,
ESPN. Let's give him his own website. He's the next big thing. Oh, everybody hates him. Fox gets 67,000 shows on Fox, more than Paul Pierce, but everybody hates him. Goes to OutKick with Clay Travis, and Clay Travis is like, yes, the two people everybody hates together, the two bad men coming together. And then what happens? Clay Travis is like, wow, I actually hate him. I hate him too much. He was too much for Clay. And everybody hates Clay, but he was too much for Clay. And now he does his, loan thing and people tune in. We all know who he is. We've all talked about it. But I would argue that this trajectory is because he has changed all the time as he both over the last 20 years, as he's both found this niche to be that guy who gets the pat on the head, to be that guy who just has a dislike for black people, black culture, and that's his niche.
Hey, Dave, freeze right there. There's one thing I just want to add. You said all that. Self-hate is also big in there.
Well, I would think so, given some of his, the way he moralizes about people professionally and how he behaves personally.
Man, he's
there's clearly a gap there.
He's consumed with self-hate, but go ahead. I just had to throw it in and I can let that pass. Go, continue.
I mean, he's always talking about morality, but I keep thinking to myself, what's the morality like in the champagne room, Jason? But let's move on from there. So early on in my career, I was asked to do a panel at the NBA Rookie Symposium. Weirdest panel you can imagine. Every rookie you can imagine. There was Kevin Durant's rookie year. That's how long ago it was. And by the way, just seeing Kevin Durant walk across a room, I was like, okay, that's a super duper star. like just the incredible just grace and coordination at 6'11" walking across a room. And then you'd see the other 7-footers and you'd just be like, that's different. That's different. Like good people like Al Horford, Joakim Noah, of course, Greg Oden. Like they're all in the room and they're walking around and Kevin Durant is gliding. It's just different. So check out this panel, though. Etan, this is going to bug you out. It's chaired by Roy S. Johnson, who longtime sports writer. I know you know.
Yep.
It's me, Jason Whitlock, and academic Dr. Trisha Rose.
Oh, wow.
Who has written incredible books about racism, about hip hop, and could not be more different than Jason Whitlock, emotionally, personally, any way you want, politically, any way you want to put it. So I'll be real quick because I'm going on too long. But a huge debate develops with the players. Roy Johnson loses the room. And we're all just going back and forth at each other because Trisha Rose is saying, because she's written about hip hop, she's saying these young people in the room have an obligation to stand for, it somehow got to this subject. Please don't ask me how. They have to stand for a hip hop that's not misogynistic, that stands with black people, and they shouldn't be role models of people who listen to hip hop that drags the community down. And this drove Joakim Noah to fits of distraction. And he was just like, you can't be judging what our music is and what it means to us.
Right.
You're from a different generation. You're also, and I mean, Joakim Noah is so darn smart. Yeah. So even though I disagreed with his argument a little bit, he was basically like, you're an academic. We've come up a very different way. You shouldn't be looking down on us for what we listen to. So it was a ferocious argument, and all the players are watching like it's Wimbledon tennis. Trisha Rose, Joakim Noah, Trisha Rose. I mean, it was a wild thing. And Jason Whitlock isn't saying a word. And I lean over to him, and I was like, I knew him, and I knew he was contrarian. I knew we had differences. But we'd even spoken on the phone before, and I was like, okay, we're two rebels. Maybe we're different, but we're both people willing to speak out. And I lean over to him and I say, yo, how should we take this on? What do you think? Like, almost like I'm strategizing with him.
Uh-huh.
And he leans over to me and he said, we don't need to say anything because all these people are bleeping bull bleep.
Mm.
And that's how he spoke about these 20, 21-year-olds in the audience.
This was 18 years ago, right? Because Durant.
Yeah, listening to Trisha Rose joking. See, I'm there. I got to tell you, I'm there very self-conscious. Not just that I'm white, obviously, but that I'm also in my late. Yeah, I know. But also that I'm in my 30s. And these are very young people. And so it's like, okay, I may not agree with everything Trisha Rose is saying, but we're here to try to help them develop how they should be politically looking at the world as NBA players. That's what the whole panel was about. Right. Like, how do we look at the world? What is our social responsibility? How can we make the world a better place? To use Etan's life of work, how do we use the platform to make a difference? And here is Jason Whitlock just leaning over to me and just being like, not only is that question irrelevant, but the people in this room are actually the worst of us. And we are wasting our time. And I almost fell over in my chair.
I bet.
So that's my little Jason Whitlock story. I know that was long, but I haven't been on the show and I want to just tell a story.
No. That is very, you know, when he talks about black people, when he talks about black culture, it's always in a demonizing, you know, way. Like all the time. And he's doing it to a white audience that applauds him and loves to hear a black person saying this, because then they can say, see, we're not racist. Look at this black man who is saying this. Mm-hmm. And he allows himself to be utilized that way. And that's why I was like, RG3, no, don't go the Jason Whitlock direction. You're better than this. Don't do this. That was my plea.
So you know, I'm glad, sorry, Chuck. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I just because we have a few minutes left, I wanted to jump in because we got Coach in the Big O. What was at the ESPYs yesterday? Is that okay?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Did you want to get something out, DZ?
Not at all. I think the Big O matters a lot more than some wasted talent has been sports reporter who can't keep a job. So go ahead, please. Okay. Big O is a king.
Big O.
Jason Whitlock is a jester. Let's talk about the king.
Very underrated, even in the sports activist community and all around. He was at the ESPYs and he accepted an award and he talked about his role at the Players Union, the NBA Players Union, which he started. And he had a great speech. I remember this one line. He said, it's important to be persistent, or as I've been called, stubborn. And he sacrificed his entire career, post-career, to give those economic rights, not just to the NBA, but all the leagues after it. We don't remember him in the same way as Kirk Flood and others. He's not talked about the same way. But, Coach, you want to talk a little about Oscar, both on and off the court?
I absolutely love Oscar Robertson, man. I have read a book, and I'm sorry, Dave's author, Eton's author, I'm an author, and I don't have his name in front of me, but it's called The Real Hoosiers, not the Hoosiers we saw with
Jack McCallum.
Okay, thank you. That was Jack McCallum? Okay, I read several books by Jack. And that's not the Hoosiers we see on with the great shot at the buzzer and all this kind of stuff with Gene Hackman. And it chronicles Oscar's upbringing at Christmas Attic High School and on the other side of the tracks in Indianapolis and so forth, and on through college. And people said Oscar's bitter and he's hostile. Why don't he chill? Why don't he get up? That's not who he is. And he wore his badge with honor. And he always stood up for black issues and causes. You talk about the All-Star game that they boycotted. I can't even watch it. The All-Star game is a travesty now. There's no respect for the game going out there. Guys out there getting numbers, posterizing each other, and so forth, so on. Oscar, and along with some of the other greats, Russell and so forth, they threatened to boycott the All-Star game so they can get unionized, and I'm paraphrasing for time's sake here. So Oscar's always been a crusader. He's always been out in front, in addition to his basketball, which he was poetry in motion. That's the best term I can describe for him. He was describing him back in the day, back in the 60s, and I never forgot it, poetry in motion, because the way he just played the game. And I was so glad when he got traded to the Bucks, and they beat the Washington Bullets, who was my team then, back in 19, was it 70, Dave?
And, yes, 71,
he got his ring. But and to what he is on the court, he is just magnificent. Also, I love to see him. I love to see him watch because I just see all the wisdom and all of the pain that he just kept inside. He took every offense personal, but yet he engages. He's the grandfather in the rocking chair to everybody in NBA. They know who he is. And he can never get enough accolades. I love Oscar Robertson. I followed him since 1965. Even before his pro career at Cincinnati, and why he went there as opposed to Indiana. It's a long story. I can go on. I love Oscar Robertson.
Yeah, Coach, I gotta cut you off. We're getting the wrap up sign. Okay. This hour went by so quick. But man, take us out, Dave. Take us out, Dave.
Yo, I'll take us out with this statement. I had to sign a legal document saying I would never say what would happen at that meeting with Trisha Rose and Joakim Noah and all the rookies. So if I get sued, I'm depending on the PFW crack legal team to defend me in courts. I'll leave y'all with that note. So, Katia, let's get them on the line. $500 an hour, I'm down for y'all to pay. No, I'm just playing. Yo, for everybody out there listening, thank you to Coach. Thank you to Chuck Modiano. Thank you to the unexpected but incredibly, incredibly just so grateful he was able to join us while on a charity jaunt. Etan Thomas. Yeah, big coming through in the clutch. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We'll be back next week. We are out of here. Peace.
Wondering how to get WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
Hello, WPFW listeners. Summertime is here. Words, Beats, and Life has the event for your family and friends this season. The second annual DMV Made Festival is happening Saturday, July 26th on the National Mall, a one-day celebration of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, promoting the intersections of arts and culture, plus health and wellness. With live music by Go-Go Legends, EU featuring Sugar Bear, vocalist Navasha Deya, jazz fusion trio The Mastetics, Black Folks Don't Swim, Kamau, and much more. Plus Family Fun Zone, Poetry and Storytelling Pavilion, Interactive Dance Stage, Live Art Installations, Hands-On Workshops, and Health and Wellness Pavilion. July 26th on the National Mall. Full details at wblinc.org/DMVMade. See you there. Brought to you by Words, Beats, and Life with support from WPFW.
Brazilian music is back in its righteous place on WPFW. I'm your host, Roberto, and Berimbau airs on Sundays, 8 to 10 p.m. Are you ready to take a trip from Rio Grande do Sul to Amazon and back? That's Berimbau, Sundays, 8 to 10 p.m. on WPFW. Building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. For nearly 5 decades, support from listeners like you has kept WPFW's wheels rolling. In fact, the single largest category of donations comes from those who donate an unused car to the station. That's right, running or not. Even a car sitting idle that needs thousands of dollars in repairs can do wonders for WPFW. If you can't drive it, donate it. WPFW will get the proceeds, and you'll get a tax break. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The Institute for Policy Studies, alongside the Wallace Global Fund, Public Citizen, and The Nation magazine, invite you to their second annual Henry Wallace Symposium, Bold Ideas for a New Progressive Majority, taking place on Thursday, July 17th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the University of California, Washington Center. Speakers include Representatives Pramila Jayapal, Greg Kassar, and Jamie Raskin, along with Lisa Gilbert of Public Citizen and IPS Executive Director Tope Falerin. That's the second annual Henry Wallace Symposium, Bold Ideas for a New Progressive Majority, on Thursday, July 17th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the University of California, Washington Center, on 1608 Rhode Island Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C. More information about how to register can be found